Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Dallas to speak with Nick Angstad of Locked On Mavericks about the Kristaps Porzingis trade rumors. We then go to Golden State to speak with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Warriors about Draymond Green's resurgence and how the Warriors are clicking. And lastly, we go to Toronto to speak with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors about the Raptors missing games, their coaching staff being out, and the recent surge in their form. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. We've got 5-6 days left here until the All-Star break, so we're getting some things solidified in our minds about these teams. So let's talk about some of the big stories across the league now. Let's get to it. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Now we bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Mavericks podcast, Nick Angstad, is here with me. Nick, by the time that people are listening to this, will Kristaps Porzingis still be a member of the Dallas Mavericks?
It depends. Are they listening to this after the trade deadline? Because if you are, man, you're real backed up on Locked On NBA shows. So maybe get a catch up on that. But yeah, by the time they listen to this on Monday or even Tuesday, he's still going to be a member of the Dallas Mavericks.
So what's going on here? We're hearing all these whispers or talk about the team maybe gauging interest in a trade on Porzingis, and then Mark Cuban coming out and denying that, and then Kristaps being asked that, and then sort of just brushing it off, saying, "Oh, I don't concern myself with that sort of talk." You know, where are we actually at with this? Because it does seem ludicrous on the surface, considering that Porzingis and Doncic last season led the Mavericks to the best offense in NBA history. He had the injury obviously in the bubble, and now coming back, like, he's not playing well, I think is an overstatement in terms of his defensive abilities. He's not really competing all that much on that end. Like, what's changed to make, because this would have been an unthinkable thing to even think of last season.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, right? Because Porzingis is, you know, still what, 25 years old. His fit with Luka is absolutely perfect as a player. You have the roll threat, the lob threat. You have the threat of him as a pick and pop partner with Luka too. Like, it just works so well, those two guys together. And we saw it last year, and we saw it work well. And if Porzingis had been available in the playoffs, this could have been the team like the Denver Nuggets that upset the Clippers. I mean, they were right there, right? They're tied 2-2, and then Porzingis is out, and then all that kind of stuff happened. And so now, fast forward to this season, Porzingis had the meniscus injury over the offseason. He had surgery, late surgery, because they expected the season to start a little bit later. They expected it to start in February or even March or so. And so he had this surgery later. He comes into camp, and he's not exactly ready, according to the Mavs. Porzingis said he was ready, but the Mavs said he wasn't ready, so they made him sit out. He sat out about 9 games, then he comes back, and he is decent, right? Like, he's okay. He's putting up, what, 18-8 or something like that, which is, you know, fine Porzingis numbers. His shooting splits have improved, but they're really bad to start the season. But yeah, his defense has been awful, like just absolutely awful. One of the worst defensive players in the NBA, according to, you know, the metrics, the ESPN plus minus and all that kind of stuff. And so now there was the rumor from Bleacher Report, from Jake Fisher, that the Mavericks have been gauging interest in a trade for Kristaps Porzingis. And then there was the Ian Begley report that the Mavericks and the Warriors had talked about a Kristaps Porzingis trade. And so you take both those rumors, and of course, immediately, right after those two rumors come out, Rick Carlisle addresses the media, and the first thing out of his mouth is, "I would like to address the rumors about Kristaps Porzingis trade or anything like that. We deny them." And he wasn't even prompted. He came out and asked it, and without even being prompted, just came out and said it. Mark Cuban said a similar thing, that they're not going to trade Kristaps Porzingis. And so you're like, all right, which side do I take in this? Is this something or is this nothing? If the team comes out and is so adamant that they're not doing something, part of you now, just, and maybe this is just me being a cynical person that has seen so many trades and so much happen, I just say, well, if you're going to deny it that hard, like, to come out and say it and to take these, like, rumors seriously to where you make a big deal about it. It makes me wonder, like, all right, are they really doing this? The timing doesn't make sense because his trade value is probably really low. He has a huge contract and it's just getting started. And the Mavericks, you know, haven't seen the best of Porzingis this year so far. And then all that happens. And then then the Mavericks have, you know, the storm and everything in Dallas and all that in Texas was awful. And they had two games postponed. And then the two games after that, Porzingis is out with back tightness. And you're like, okay, they just had 8 days off. And then he's out with back tightness. That's a little bit weird. And then compound that with the Mavericks just saw this happen with Dennis Smith Jr., where he claimed back tightness. And then he was out for about a week. And then after that, he got traded because he wanted out and all that kind of stuff. So there's just so many different red flags that show up with this. I don't think that they're shopping. I don't think that they're shopping him. I do think that they probably asked what his trade value is in case something does happen. But I don't think that that's, you know, weird or out of the ordinary or anything. I think teams do that all the time. And GMs have said that, yeah, we call all the time and just ask, like, what would you guys take in a trade? That's the reason why the Mavericks got Porzingis in the first place. They had been on the phone with the Knicks that week talking about what would a Porzingis trade look like. The Knicks weren't shopping Porzingis, but the Mavericks knew what the Knicks wanted, and so then they got him. So, long story short, that's what's going on. And so now the Mavericks have a decision to make. Is Kristaps Porzingis, does he want out? If he wants out and he's demanding out, then the Mavericks may have to trade him. If he's not, then they just have to make it right and fix it. And the best case scenario for the Mavericks is that Kristaps Porzingis stays with the Mavericks and he improves on the defensive end back to at least his levels like last season. And then they become, you know, a great offense, decent defense. And then they go into the playoffs and Luka does his magic and hopefully they win a round.
The thing you mentioned about you're vigorously denying these trade rumors, I just think if you go that hard, then you can't do it. And I'll tell you why. Because not only, yeah, you can say, well, if you're making this much of a big deal, you know, thou dost protest too much, that sort of idea. But if you go out of your way to, you know, unprompted bring this up and, you know, deny it from all corners of the organization, and then you do it, like player distrust, your free agency appeal is shot, and we know that having an organization that treats players in that way can have your deleterious effects on not only the current group's chemistry, but in terms of future deals and contract extensions and what that means for Luka when his restricted free agency comes up and all that sort of stuff. So I just think if you're going to go that hard to deny it, you know, to turn around and do the opposite, it doesn't just have an issue like, oh, well, that'll just blow over. Like this stuff lasts, you know, months and years afterwards, knowing that sort of stuff. We know, you know, we hear the ramifications of, you know, Isaiah Thomas in Boston and some of the issues that potentially arose from the way that he was traded after his injury. And that sort of stuff, I think, is important to know. So I look at it the opposite way that you do, that if they are going that hard at it, that it makes it almost impossible for them to then come turn around and do that, unless, yeah, the discussion's already been had with Kristaps saying, we're going to go out and deny this, but you want out and we'll see what we can do. Look, maybe something like that's happened. Who knows? But on the surface, it's a pretty poor look. Now, Nick,
Well, I want to push back on one thing there. Yep. I would agree with you. However, we just saw this happen with the Clippers, right? We just saw them hoist Blake Griffin's number into the Raptors, sure, and say, you're going to retire a Clipper. And then they trade him, just straight up trade him to the Pistons, like send him off to Siberia, basically. And then they immediately got the two biggest free agents. So I know they're in LA. It's a little bit different, the market and all that. But it's not a rule, I don't think, that if they go out and trade somebody they said they weren't going to trade, that they can't get free agents. It's just hilarious how that specific instance happened in LA.
That is a good point. I think the LA factor is a factor there. Now, last thing before I let you go, Nick, the Mavericks are 500. They are, what, 1.5 games behind the Nuggets from the eighth seed, you know, firmly in the playoff or play-in game type scenario. But I'd say that's probably a disappointment from where they expected to be at this point in the season. What is the biggest one thing they need to change to push themselves back into, I guess, even the mix for home court advantage?
Oh, the Mavs have the NBA right where they want them, Josh. They're right there. They're right ready. This Mavericks team, yes, it would be a disappointment on the surface. If you just looked at it, if you parachuted into the season and said, oh man, this Mavericks team with Luka and Porzingis and they're, you know, the ninth seed in the West right now. Yes, but considering all that they've gone through with missing so many guys and they've only had their main starters together for like less than 10 games. I mean, it really hasn't been that much. And so I consider the 500 mark a success, to be honest, even though they've had Luka, just the amount of players that they've been missing. I think that the season kind of starts right now, and wherever the Mavericks can go and however they can take them, you know, it starts right now, right? The Mavericks are 8-3 in their last 11 games, and they're starting to really climb back, and they're starting to get over. They're healthy now. Kristaps Porzingis aside, he's been playing, but he's been in and out. So the one thing that they really need to do is they got to improve their defense. The defense has just been terrible. Even in this stretch where they've won games, they've been like, they've allowed like 120 points per 100 possessions, which is just like a god awful defense you can't even imagine. So they need Porzingis to be better. They need to communicate better on defense. I think the week off from the Storms and all that, I think that was like a mini training camp, and they didn't even have all their players at the beginning of the season in training camp. So they got a mini training camp, had four or five practices, and got to focus a lot on defense. We saw that in the last couple of games the Mavericks have played. So that's the one thing they really need to do: communicate better on defense. And Porzingis just has to be better defensively. That's literally the one thing that changes this team. So much of this team is dependent on, can Porzingis defend well? Can he step up and be that second star they need him to be?
Well, Nick, it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. Of course, you'll have it covered for us all over on Locked On Mavericks. Thank you for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Always.
Wouldn't it be great if there was a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep, focus, be better, act better? There is. And if you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. It is a daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is the only meditation app advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. If you're overwhelmed, Headspace is a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Now, you know, with what I do for work, you're covering the NBA, it's full on. We're working 7 days a week, we're covering so much stuff, and sometimes you just need to chill out. So Headspace has been awesome for me in that regard. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/lockedonNBA. That's headspace.com/lockedonNBA for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now, so head to headspace.com/lockedonNBA today. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. And BetOnline, they even cover award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time, updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And to get that 50% welcome bonus, use our promo code LOCKEDON. That'll get you that 50% welcome bonus when you make your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We're covering everything you need to know about the NBA, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Warriors podcast, Wes Goldberg, is here with me. Wes, I want to focus in here on Draymond Green, who, you know, started the season off poorly. Had what we think was a COVID positive diagnosis, then had a foot injury, and started out playing not particularly well. He had 2 blocks in his first 16 games, and he just looked lethargic. He wasn't shooting well, the defense had dropped off, and now he's gone on an absolutely massive run. Yeah, what do you think it was? Is it just an injury recovery sort of scenario? Was the foot and the COVID just bothering him? Because now he is putting up monster numbers. The Warriors have won 3 straight, 5 out of their last 7. And look, we can talk about Steph getting back to MVP form, but I think almost the biggest reason here is Draymond recovering some of that form from 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, and you know, he went into the season, right? He basically became an Instagram influencer for Peloton during the offseason. Went into the season feeling like he was in the best shape that he had been in you know, a few years. And then, like you mentioned, he had that coronavirus issue. The foot issue was a big deal. And so it just not – when you're dealing with things like that, right, it's not like an upper body injury where you could stay on the bike and you can maintain your conditioning and all these things. I mean, these are things that really took a hit on his conditioning overall. And he's been very transparent this entire time. Hey, I'm 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away from being in peak playing condition. And he said that about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and now he's playing the way he's playing with the numbers that he's putting up, specifically with these assists that he's the other night putting up 19 assists and stuff like that. So yeah, he's playing. He's in better playing shape. He's playing more minutes. Recently, Steve Kerr let him play. Has gotten him back to his usual minutes rotation of playing the entire first and third quarters, which he wasn't doing earlier in the year. So all of that is true. But it's also true that the guys around him are getting more comfortable, right? Andrew Wiggins is more comfortable. Kelly Oubre is more comfortable. Steph Curry is playing at an MVP caliber level. And so when you have these guys making shots and making and you know, there's so much less of Draymond Green early in the season. He was just pointing and going crazy and screaming at teammates to cut and do this and do that. You don't see that as much anymore, right? So now he's able to settle into that, you know, that point forward role, that quarterback role that he has without necessarily having to, you know, coach his teammates through every single play. So all of these things combined contribute to why it is that Draymond Green is playing the way he is right now.
Now, you talk about teammates, and I'm not sure if it's coincidence. It probably isn't, but yeah, Draymond's improvement in form did come when James Wiseman was out, and so much of Green's, early season play was, as you said, trying to tell Wiseman where to be in the starting lineup, like where do you need to go, making up for his errors defensively and positioning and offensively and his issue with catching and that sort of stuff. So do you think that some of that is also just getting more of that lineup and grouping that makes sense rather than Draymond having to devote so much of his time, and other players as well, who devote so much of their time into terms of getting Wiseman in the right spot and you're making up for his errors? And I'm not using this to bash on Wiseman. Of course, he didn't play last year. He's 19 years old. But in terms of getting a player that just knows what they need to do, lets Draymond focus on, and the other guys, and Oubre and Wiggins and Curry focus on what they need to do rather than worrying about what's happening in that other spot.
It's a good point, and it's one that should not be overlooked, Josh. I really do think that that has something to do with Draymond playing the way he is now, because so much of his minutes early in the year were tied to Wiseman, who of course was starting at center to open the season. And now those minutes that they share the court are so much fewer and further between. There's about, with this new rotation pattern that Steve Kerr seems to have settled on since Wiseman and Kevon Looney, who is now starting at center, have returned from their injuries, there's 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes a game max where they're on the court together at this point. And that seems to be a good balance. And it's tough, right, for Steve Kerr and, you know, Bob Myers and all them who are talking about these things on a daily basis. You want to develop James Wiseman, and you do want to develop Wiseman ultimately to the point where he can play and thrive next to Steph Curry and Draymond Green, because he's your, you know, starting center in waiting, right? We know this. And so, but I think they've realized that they can't rush that process. Just get James Wiseman able to play at an NBA level, and then you could figure out the chemistry with Steph and Draymond at some point, you know, in the future. And so, yeah, having Draymond not having to keep his head on a swivel to figure out if James Wiseman is the right place or not. Instead, you replace Wiseman with a guy like Kevon Looney, who has so much success and experience in this system, that Draymond Green is able to trust that Kevon is going to be in the right place at the right time. He doesn't have to worry about that, and he can just focus on what it is that he's doing.
Do you think that this team is, obviously they're sitting, we're recording this before Sunday's game, they're sitting in the 7th seed, 19 and 15. Do you think that they are in the market to make a move in the next couple of weeks before the trade deadline?
They could. I think they'll probably make some sort of minor move. There could be a way for them to maybe clear a roster spot so they could bring Juan Toscano-Anderson up from his two-way contract up to the 15-man roster. So I think they'll explore something like that, where maybe they have a 2-for-1 trade that opens up some sort of roster spot or something like that. Interestingly enough, I think that Kelly Oubre playing as well as he has this month could make him somehow more tradable, more of an option for the Warriors to trade, because prior to, you know, this hot shooting streak and thriving, you know, with the Warriors the way he has, I don't know that there was a much of a market for him on the, you know, in regards to a trade. But now that he's playing well and he's productive and he's playing defensively the best that he's played his entire career, there's a lot of teams I think that could want a guy like Kelly Oubre. And you know, he's an expiring deal. The Warriors traded a protected first rounder to get him. Chances are that they won't be able to keep him around after this season, because he's just going to be too expensive, and they already have one of the highest payrolls in the league. So do you try to move Kelly Oubre now in order to get a guy who might be a little bit cheaper and on a longer term contract. It's something that they could consider, but we'll see.
It is going to be interesting to see how this team, who was struggling so much to begin this season, but now players are healthy, lineups are making sense, players are playing at elite levels. Wes, you'll have everything covered for us about the Warriors on Locked On Warriors as they push higher up the standings. Thanks for coming on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks, Josh.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and Built Bar is improved, and it's got 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Joins the already stacked roster, which includes coconut almond, coconut orange, and double chocolate. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. It doesn't taste like your standard protein bar, which is just so hard to stomach. This tastes like a delicious treat, yet you're not dealing with high calories. You're not dealing with high sugar. You've got high protein and everything else that you'd want in a protein bar. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. The peanut butter bar, one of the original flavors, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories and just 5 grams of sugar and 5 grams of net carbs. And if you go to builtbar.com, you can use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your next order. The promo code is LOCKEDON20. That's a new promo code, LOCKEDON20, for 20% off at builtbar.com. Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs. How much do you really know about these potential NBA stars of tomorrow? If you want to know more, you need to subscribe to the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. Prospects, scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. Now we bring in the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast. Sean Woodley is here with me. Sean, the Raptors game on Sunday was postponed due to COVID issues. We already knew that Pascal Siakam was out until the All-Star break. Nick Nurse and basically the whole coaching staff was out as well. Do we have any further news on who else is in the protocols or if this is endangering any more games this week for Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, nothing in terms of names or anything like that. It sounds like there are multiple players who are involved in the protocols. I'm assuming because of a prolonged nature of, you know, the absence for Siakam, for example, I'm assuming there's got to be a positive test in there somewhere just because of how serious it's been and the fact that they had to postpone the game. But no specific names or anything like that. But, you know, it's probably best to just not play any of these games this week, honestly. And thinking back, they probably shouldn't have played the game on Friday against the Rockets. You know, it was a fun story with Sergio Scariolo stepping in fresh off a plane from overseas coaching the Spanish national team to, you know, jump onto the bench and win his first NBA game. But I'm not privy to what the protocols are, and I'm sure that everything has been, you know, vetted and the plan is being adhered to as it's supposed to be. But it seems just kind of irresponsible that they played that game considering the uncertainty. And it seems as though the Raptors didn't quite have a handle on how many people were going to be in the protocols. And I'm sure the Rockets aren't terribly pleased today either. Obviously I think their game went on today, but that's certainly a thing to keep in mind. And I'm just surprised that the NBA let that game go forward. And I continue to be surprised about how, like, little they seem to care about all of this. So maybe I shouldn't be surprised at all about the way things transpired. But yeah, certainly not a great situation for a team that has been figuring itself out lately. And you just hope that more than anything else, everyone's okay. If there are positive tests, no one is terribly sick or anything like that.
Well, Shams Charania is saying that there is the game's not going ahead because they didn't have enough players due to positive test results and contact tracing. We don't know how that splits down. We already know that Siakam is out. So we just don't know how the rest of that shakes out. And I guess how that splits and how that contract tracing goes depends on whether their next two games, which I believe are Tuesday and on Thursday before the break, whether they're able to proceed. But let's not talk just consistently about that because there's not much more information we have. You know, things will get sorted out as they get sorted out. The Raptors started out famously, Sean, 2-8, worked themselves back to a 500 record. At the moment, they sit 17-17, currently in the fourth seed at the time of us recording this. What's been the biggest change that's taken them from a team that was really just struggling to begin the year and now is, I wouldn't say they're rolling at absolute top capacity, but you know, back to 500, back in the top four is obviously a far cry from where they were to begin the year.
Yeah, so there are two things. One, Pascal Siakam was pretty rough for those first 10 games, kind of what he was in the bubble in a lot of ways, and he's been awesome ever since. His playmaking has been ridiculously good. He's routinely pulling off 7-8 assist games with one or two turnovers. He's been really excellent in that department. His defense is kind of back at the all-NBA menacing level it's always been. And the other thing, too, is that the Raptors have embraced small ball. It's beautiful. If they got rid of Aaron Baines in the starting five, I'm sorry for your boy. He just was not cutting it in the starting five whatsoever, wasn't giving them good minutes. They move him to the bench, And they start small with OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Norm Powell, and Kyle Lowry, the lineup that was first kind of unleashed on the world in the postseason last year against the Celtics and was really good, especially on defense in that series. I believe they held the Celtics like 83 points for 100 possessions over a pretty decent size, you know, 50-something minutes in that series. And they've just embraced it. And lo and behold, yeah, the rebounding is a little bit shaky here and there, but they're forcing misses on a ton of possessions. So the offensive boards that they do give up don't hurt them quite as much just because of the sheer volume of misses they're forcing. And they're getting out and running off of that stuff. When you couple that, you're just playing your five best players together for large stretches of the game with kind of discovering a workable bench lineup that features Aaron Baines at the center with Chris Boucher playing as a four, which he's more a four than a five. He's not really a five at all, considering his slender frame, the fact that he gets out muscled by guys bigger than him. And when he's playing the four, he's kind of just free to do the thing where he flies up to the corners and blocks threes like twice a game. It's absolutely like wonderful to behold. And I'm glad they've kind of found that little pair that works. DeAndre Bembry's been a really nice bench piece too. They found some workable rotations and they're just kind of playing the way I think you expect the Raptors to play in the regular season, kind of a well-oiled machine. They don't seem to panic. They kind of always feel like they're in games even when they're not playing well. And that was just something that wasn't in existence at the start of the year, but they've really recaptured that identity. And I think it also helps that everyone's kind of learned the defense too. You know, all the new faces they have coming off the bench, they were pretty out of sorts early on, but now they seem to be really adopting Nick Nurse's setup and things are working quite well.
Do you think there's any, or how large of a factor maybe is a better way to phrase this, is the slow start is just, you know, recalibrating themselves by being in Tampa Bay versus, you know, being at home in Toronto?
I think that was a huge part of it, man. You know, they only had like three preseason games to get settled. You know, guys were famously still like living in the hotel. They had like a whole thing set up in the hotel with all the players, the little practice facility and stuff. And people were basically living, you know, steps away from the practice facility. Finally, it seems some guys have found homes and now are just kind of settled down, knowing they're going to be there for the entire season. It was still up in the air whether they were going to return to Toronto in March. That's not happening. And I doubt it'll happen even, you know, into the postseason in you know, the summer or late spring. And I think just the understanding that they're there, and this is just what it is this year, I think has kind of sunk in. And, you know, there was a bit of a tough start early on in the season too. Kyle Lowry, you know, was going through the COVID protocols during the preseason. It just, you know, there's a lot on the plate of these guys. And I think it's entirely human that they were a little bit disjointed. You know, they were even letting fans into the games early on. And I think what famously ended that experiment was a game they played against the Celtics where, you know, the very few fans that were in attendance were very much not Raptors fans. They were chanting for Taco Fall to get the game in the fourth quarter, kind of deafening any pro-Raptors sentiments. So I think, you know, fans not being there, just sort of settling in, getting comfortable, kind of getting in the rhythm. And honestly, going on the road, they had a lot of really long road trips during this first part of the season. And they keep joking about every game is a road game this year. But I think those, you know, trips on the road out west and a couple other long trips they had, and it kind of helped them gel a little bit. You know, it's kind of cliche at this point, but it really does seem like it worked. And they seem to just kind of be a team that is comfortable with one another. And there's not that sort of specter of, all right, where are we going to be playing in 2 months, hanging over their heads? They seem to know, all right, we're here, we'll make the best of it. And they're certainly doing that right now.
Well, it is going to be interesting to see, you know, if they play this week and if they can continue this form post-break. Sean, you'll cover it for us all over on Locked On Raptors. Thanks for coming on Locked On NBA with me.
Of course, man, anytime.
And that'll do it for today's episode of Locked On NBA. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star review, tell your friends, share it out there on social media. You can find me on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.